Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're really getting into the weeds, the plumbing, you could say, of the U.S. stock market.
That's right. We're looking at how some, well, seemingly routine corporate actions might be creating these hidden vulnerabilities.
Exactly. We've got some forensic research here that maps out drivers behind extreme price swings that seem, frankly, totally disconnected from fundamental value.
And the key anomaly we need to start with, what the research calls settlement tightness.
Settlement tightness.
Yeah, it's basically an acute supply-demand problem, specifically for shares that people need to borrow. When that gets really tight, the market essentially, well, it breaks its promise. That leads to big spikes in fails to deliver, FTDs.
Fails to deliver. Let's pause on that, because for listeners who aren't deep in market mechanics, that sounds maybe just like a late delivery. Is that it?
Not quite. Think of an FTD more like a forced IOU. Someone, often a short seller, traded a share but physically couldn't get it to deliver 2 days later at settlement.
Why?
Because the share just wasn't available. Couldn't be borrowed, couldn't be located anywhere in the system. So when you see FTDs piling up consistently, that's hard evidence the borrowing market has, you know, seized up.
Got it. So that seizing up is what drives the crazy volatility we see sometimes.
That's the primary driver, yes. The parabolic moves.
Okay, so our mission today, trace how this happens. Unpack this self-reinforcing mechanism, this flywheel that turns standard corporate finance moves into a potential systemic mess.
Exactly. And it often kicks off with one specific catalyst, the reverse stock split.
Yes.
Companies do these high ratio splits, maybe 1-for-20.
Yeah.
Often defensively. They need to keep their share price above that dollar minimum the exchanges require.
Right. The minimum bid price rule.
Precisely. But the consequence is it drastically shrinks the public float. Sometimes by 95%.
95%. Wow. So if the float, the pool of shares people can actually trade, shrinking it that much sounds like you're just asking for trouble. Is that volatility an unintended side effect, or is it pretty foreseeable?
Oh, it's quite foreseeable. You constrict the borrowing market that severely, you're instantly kicking that flywheel into high gear. Then Ajit case, New World Commerce, back in 2025, is a perfect example. They did exactly that, a 1-for-20 reverse split, April 7th, 2025.
Okay, so the scarcity trap was set. What pushed it over the edge?
An accelerant. Concentrated buying pressure. Investor Vladimir Galkin started buying up shares quite rapidly after that split happened.
After the flow was already tiny.
Exactly. His stake grew steadily, hit about 19% by October 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And what's key here is how one large buyer, just systematically hoovering up those newly scarce shares,
right,
it instantly turned what would normally be just buying pressure into this exponential settlement tightness.
And this is where it goes wild, right? The combination tiny float, aggressive buyer led to that huge market dislocation.
Absolutely textbook. The stock hit, what, $128.09 intraday? That's over 2,300% gain. And at the same time, leading up to September 30th that year, it racked up $0.14 billion in cumulative FTDs. That sheer volume of settlement failures, that's the flywheel just completely spinning out of control.
Okay, so Negi is a stark example in one stock, but how do we know this isn't just a one-off? How does this kind of problem start to infect the broader market?
Good question. The contamination pathway, you can sort of track it via a key systemic indicator, the regulation SHO threshold list.
Match SHO, okay.
Right. A stock lands on this list if its FTDs stay above 10,000 shares and 0.5% of its total float for 5 business days straight.
Yeah.
It basically flags persistent settlement fails.
So what did the list show around that time?
Well, analysts looked at the NASDAQ Q threshold list for October 21, 2025. And what they found was pretty striking structurally.
Yeah.
15 out of the 56 securities on the list that's over 26% were ETFs, exchange-traded funds.
Wow. Not individual stocks, but funds.
Yes. And many were concentrated into just a few trusts, like Title Trust 2 showed up 10 times on that single list. That really suggests the risk isn't contained, it's propagating.
So FTDs aren't just sticking to these small, illiquid stocks. They're somehow bleeding into these widely held funds. What's the mechanism there? How does an ETF catch this FTD problem?
We call it settlement risk propagation. And it hinges on the authorized participants, the APs.
The market makers for ETFs, essentially.
Right. They're the ones allowed to create and redeem ETF shares by trading baskets of the underlying stocks. Now, many of these newer thematic or leveraged ETFs, they hold some really illiquid small cap stocks in their baskets.
Okay.
So if an AP needs to create new ETF shares, but they cannot get their hands on one of those tiny illiquid underlying components, maybe stock like NIG.
They can't complete the basket.
Exactly. They can't deliver the full basket, so they fail to deliver the ETF share itself. It causes an FTD in the ETF. It's like a chain reaction. 1 week, illiquid link breaks the creation process.
And suddenly, a problem in a tiny stock gets amplified into a problem for a big, widely traded fund.
Precisely. It spreads the settlement risk across the market structure.
So bringing this all together for you, the listener, the evidence really points towards a kind of systemic vulnerability. You have routine things like these defensive reverse splits combining with modern products like these thematic ETFs.
And the result is fragility, a market instability that seems completely untethered from the actual company's performance or value.
Yeah.
It becomes about the structure, not the substance.
Right.
Structure over substance.
And that raises a really critical question, I think. Our current market surveillance systems are quite good at spotting single stock issues, right? Spoofing, manipulation in one name. Mm. But are they equipped to see these kinds of second, third order connections? This structural fragility? The risk isn't just one bad actor anymore. It might be baked into the system itself.
So what's the takeaway thought? What kind of analysis do we need?
Well, maybe we need new approaches, perhaps tracking cross-entity relationships, like who are the boutique underwriters bringing these small caps public via reverse splits, and are they connected to the ETF sponsors bundling them up? We need to look at those connections to truly get ahead of the structural risk before, you know, the next flare-up.